could be big. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the June 17th, 2014 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Would you please stand while we recite the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. May we have the roll?
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here, but struggling with this chair.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne? Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
14 members present?
That's everybody, and that's a quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We will be having an executive session at the end of the meeting, and we'll be discussing collective bargaining negotiations and litigation, and possibly real estate transactions, sales. We'll go next to privilege of the floor, and I'd like to call on Leslyn McBean Claiborne, who has a special presentation tonight.
I do. Notice I'm running.
Yeah, the things are over there at the podium. The plaque and things are at the podium.
Notorious for tripping and falling, so I'll try not to. I have the distinct privilege of presenting our Distinguished Youth Award for the month of June, and I would like to invite Catherine Marte and her mom, Lydin, to come on up here. And stand with me. So you all really take a good look at this young lady. She is going places. And hopefully she'll remember me when she's all rich and famous. So I want to, Catherine was nominated by Ms. Cheryl Blake, who's a graduation coach at Ithaca High School, for the Distinguished Youth Award. I was presenting awards at the Ithaca High School Senior Awards Convocation on June 5th, and I took the opportunity to remind some of the teachers and folks there that the Tompkins County Legislature offers a Distinguished Youth Award and to think about people to nominate, and then I got this letter from Ms. Cheryl Blake, which I was very happy for. Let me tell you a little bit about what Ms. Cheryl said, and I'll tell you a little bit about Catherine. Yes, I'm going to stand here and talk about you, so. Sure, it's dear Mrs. McBean Claiborne, I'm pleased to recommend Catherine Marte for the Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award given by the Tompkins County Legislature. Catherine has been an outstanding student in her classes during the past 4 years at Ithaca High School. She has been an active sports enthusiast and served as a three-sport varsity athlete from 10th to 12th grade. Three sports. Volleyball, basketball, and softball. She's very determined. I have learned a great deal about her and her abilities, having known her for 10 years, first as her fourth grade teacher. I know she would continue to do well and represent herself accordingly, as stated by this presented award. Catherine's determination to succeed has led her to excel in her many endeavors. She consistently strives for excellence and takes pride in being a positive role model to her teammates and other students. She participates in class regularly, and it shows in her work and grades, graduating this year with a 3.5 GPA. Three sports and a 3.5 GPA. Okay. This attitude also led to her, led her to receive several scholarships and awards as a graduating senior. Now, and then she goes on to list a host of community service and volunteer activities Catherine does. But not only that, the child works at Wegmans. She's been working there for, what, 2-3 years? So she works, she plays 3 varsity sports, volunteers at several places in the community, and maintains a 3.5 GPA. Yes, she is definitely going places. One of the things that I want to point out, in 2012, she lent her skills in hosting a basketball clinic, which was a fundraiser for the fight against cancer. And I was very moved by that because you all know my story. And despite it all, Catherine has been a stellar staff member at Wegmans Food Market since 2012. Definitely all around abilities. I've known Catherine and her family for a few years now. She's been also a participant at GX. She's worked there, at one point when she was a little smaller. And just to point out a little bit about what an excellent young lady she is, and you never know who is among you sometimes. At the Scholarship Awards, Catherine received the Beverly J. Martin Scholarship for academic excellence for any student who's going on continuing their education in college. They kept calling her name. I kept saying, good Lord, is the child going to sit down? She received the Henry Highland Garnet Lodge, Prince Hall Affiliate, and the Eastern Stars Award for Student Excellence in Community Service. She received the, which I thought this was impressive, the Legislative Assembly Award. This award is presented to the senior girl who has made the greatest contribution to the school during her entire school career. The recipient of this award is selected by faculty nomination and a vote by the senior class. Need I say more about this young lady? I'm going to start crying like she's my own child. She received the scholarship from Wegmans to continue her education. She also received the Terry Habecker Award, which is for sports. I can go on and on. I put little marks on all the pages as they kept calling her name. Catherine and her family are immigrants. They've been living here in Ithaca for a little bit and have been really striving to do well, sometimes despite, challenges. It's funny. I'll tell you a little funny story. I called her mom because I didn't have Catherine's number to tell her that, you know, Catherine had been nominated and I'd really like to present this award to her. And Lee Dan, I know her, and all I knew every time I saw her, I spoke to her in Spanish. She says, hi, Leslie. In English, she said, hi, Leslie. And I'm giving her the message, and she says, I don't speak English very well. I can't take the message. I tell Catherine to call you. That was it. I didn't know that there was, you know, that going on within, because they're always positive, always involved, whether it is cooking some food and serving to folks, or, like I said, volunteering, being a 3-sport athlete, being a role model to her class, that it doesn't matter what your family is facing, you can overcome and you can do well. So, Catherine, I am very pleased to present you with the Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award, given to you by the Tompkins County Legislature, the members of whom you see sitting around this table today and the chair behind you of the legislature. So where is it all? So let me read this quickly. It says the 2014 June Distinguished Youth Award, an award that emphasizes a truly inspirational and exceptional individual, Catherine Marte, brought to you in part by the following: Bangs Ambulance, Tompkins County Legislature, Specialty Trophy and Awards of Dryden, Purity Ice Cream, and Cayuga Radio Group. So all of these are sponsors of this award. And I tell everybody, all the young people who receive this award, it goes a long way on your resume. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes, you may. We also have a bunch of goodies for you from all those sponsors as well. I'm going to give this to Mom because you're asking for the podium. I'll get out of the way.
Oh. You want to go?
Okay. Photo, photo.
I want to start out by thanking you guys for choosing me as a candidate for this award. It really means a lot. Thank you.
I need a producer.
Leslin, thank you for that nomination. What a wonderful resume this young person brought.
Where is she going to school?
She goes to Onondaga and then go to Syracuse.
At this time, we'll have public privilege of the floor, and I'm going to ask that we have blue cards, anyone who would like to speak to us. I have one at this point. And remember, privilege of the floor is a privilege granted by this meeting. It's not a right. We have some rules for speaking, and we ask that the folks sign the blue card that has the rules on it. They read, I agree to a 3-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. And we do have a countdown clock now, kind of a little overkill with just one blue card so far, but something we've been trying to do. Carol.
So can I ask, I know our one speaker is Susan Ottenweller,
yes.
Who is the now the executive director of Better Housing for Tompkins County. She lives off in Seneca County up the lake and is not full-time, so she did come down to see us in conjunction with the CDBG grant. I'm just going to ask that we don't necessarily need to run the clock if it goes a few minutes.
Any objection? Okay. Susan Ottenweller, welcome.
Good evening. I'm Susan Ottenweller. I became the executive director of Better Housing for Tompkins County in late fall, and I want to thank Carol for giving me the opportunity just to introduce myself. I will not go over 3 minutes. And just to reinforce, we were here tonight for a committee meeting for a grant that we're putting into the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council for a program to do a second phase of a program we call Healthy Homes. Better Housing for Tompkins County works exclusively with rural, low and moderate income people around home ownership assistance, counseling, and subsidies to help low income people purchase their first homes, around rehabilitation for existing homeowners. And we own and manage about 120 apartments for seniors and disabled in the rural areas. And I remember that one of the members of the legislature has often talked about the need to address the renovation of mobile homes. And I just wanted to say that we have 3 grants that we have now been awarded, one from the Community Foundation, one from the Legacy Foundation, and a large one from the Affordable Housing Corporation of New York State. And all of those will allow us to address weatherization, energy improvements, and mechanicals like septics and wells for low-income homeowners who own mobile homes. So I think it's a good start. We recognize that that's a tremendous need among our homeowners, and we're very committed to continuing to raise funds for that program. So we thank you for your support of the programs that we operate, and thanks.
Susan, I plead guilty. I'm the one that always talks about mobile homes.
I thought it was.
And I just wondered, will that also apply to homes owned within mobile home parks?
That is a technical problem and has been the issue. And these sources that we have identified, I think the AHC grant is about $300,000. The Community Foundation grant is $5,000 and the Legacy Foundation is $5,000. We're specifically written so that we can do mobile homes in mobile home parks.
That's great.
So that's a start.
Thanks. Carol, do you want that resolution is on the consent agenda. Would you want to move that now so we could...
The consent agenda, or do you want me to move that one separately?
And why don't you move that separately,
okay,
and then we can let her go back to Seneca County.
Happy to do that. I will move. This is on packet page 7, folks. Resolution C, authorizing submittal of New York State Office of Community Renewal Community Development Block Grant Program 2013. Is that correct? Regional Economic Development Council, REDC, consolidated funding application, community renewal fund application to continue the Tompkins County Healthy Homes Rehabilitation Program. And I so move.
Seconded by Will. Discussion. Ready to vote? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you.
And if I may, Mike, I just want to thank Better Housing folks. I want to thank Megan McDonald, who's also here in case you had questions, and our staff for putting together, you know, first the CDBG application for the first-time home buyers that we just were successful at, and now this for the rehab. It's a lot of work. In another life, I actually wrote some CDBG applications, and they're big. So... thank you to everybody.
Thank you, Carol.
Good luck.
Chair's reports. I will just mention that I attended an open house at the New York State Electric and Gas Building on Dryden Road this afternoon. There was a tour. They're trying to publicize the fact that they are trying to rent that building, either parts of it, all of it, or different floors on that building. It's in the town of Dryden. It's actually in Martha's district, but it's an important resource for Tompkins County. It used to house as many as 4,000 employees up there. They're down to 168, sadly. But hopefully if these efforts to find new occupants for it can come to fruition, perhaps the numbers of employees can in that section can increase. So I just wanted to tell you about that. It was a nice thing, and probably if other people wanted to tour it, there could be arrangements made for that. I gave copies of the handouts that I received to the Economic Development Committee. They're also supposed to send it to us on email, so other folks that haven't got it, I will... when that comes through, I'll send that out to everybody. That takes us up already up to Joe's report. County Administrator Joseph Mariana. Yes.
Legislature.
Legislative privilege.
Oh, you folks want to talk too? Sorry. But I guess not. All right. There's no municipal officials that I see, so I will move to the legislature privilege of the floor. And I see Martha had her hand up.
No.
Jim has his hand up. Then Leslin.
Is it Martha or me?
Jim.
Oh, 12 words. Dustin Brown and the Los Angeles Kings are the Stanley Cup champs.
Leslin.
And the mayor of New York City was on television singing I Love L.A.
Guess that was the bet.
You should.
I'm wearing my red today in solidarity with the African Women's Initiative here in Ithaca, who are at this moment hosting a rally from the Public Library City Hall to GIAC Rally and Fundraiser to not only bring awareness to the plight of the girls who are being kidnapped, abused, and just that situation in Nigeria and other African countries. I wanted to read just a little bit. If you hadn't seen this, this is what it looks like. Bring back our girls. That is happening now. I wish I could be there with them. I wanted to read a little bit, you know, when they contacted me about, you know, wanting to use GIAC. This message came and I was very moved by it. It said, at the moment, it is acts of solidarity and substantive interventions that provide the encouragement and support to keep survivors and activists in embattled areas of Africa so they can maintain the needed activist pressure on the state and cement fractured groups in working toward a progressive goal. We want to raise resources to support their work of resistance and empathy, especially to mark the day of the African child, which is today. Thank you for helping to spread the word. We are not as helpless as Boko Haram terrorists would like us to believe. I just wanted to share that a little bit because, you know, this is such a horrible situation that's happening, and we hope that everyone who's out there can be aware and help to support this movement to stop this kind of terrorism and bring back our girls. So I just wanted to share that. I also wanted to say a great big thank you to the county for participating in the GIAC Festival this past weekend. It was kind of cold. Mm-hmm. I know, poor Dryden Dairy Days. I was thinking about it. Because you were earlier than we were. So it was cold, but it was still a lovely event. The Solid Waste Division, I have to give them big kudos. For being there, for bringing a fun game and an activity that, you know, people had a chance to play and continue to bring awareness around the issues of sustainability, recycling, reuse, because not often people think about that. And I don't know if it's because of their efforts that this year, more than ever, people actually placed their water bottles and plastics and cups and so on in the receptacle that we set out for them rather than in the trash. Because every year we're fishing through the trash, pulling them out. But this year they really, I don't know how the what happened or what changed. And I'm attributing it to the Solid Waste Division being there. Yes. But they were placed where we ask people to place them, so it was easy to just gather them up. So thank all of you for who were there for coming out, for participating. Thanks to Marsha for organizing the group to be there. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslin, and thanks for those comments, particularly about the young women in Africa. I've got Dave, then Martha.
Just would like to let everybody know that on the 5th of June, Pat Pryor and myself traveled to Albany for the second annual broadband conference and award ceremony, in which we received a very nice award for Tompkins County and Clarity Connect, and Cuba County was included in that at the same time for the most collaborative project to obtain broadband throughout the county. It's a very nice award ceremony, and we were selected out of 50 participants that applied for that particular situation. So I thought that was pretty good. And now if we can just get Albany to release the funds, we can finish the project.
Thanks, Dave, and thanks for traveling.
Just one other thing I'd like to say. I'd like to thank my committee and Pat's former committee for all the hard work and making this award possible and making the broadband system that we're going to have eventually possible. Thank you all very much.
Martha?
Thank you. The cold reminded me, your comment about the cold. And Dave, that award really is spectacular. I mean, that was really lovely. That I'm glad that Marcia got a little something in the newspaper about that. Really something to be proud about. Mentioning the cold reminded me, I was in Elmira in two outdoor events on Saturday. They had their Juneteenth celebration, and I guess that's this coming Saturday at Southside here, and the 150th anniversary of the founding of the city of Elmira. So that was two nice events. It would have been nicer with a little less wind, but important to mark both of those occasions. And, you know, we should be thinking about it's our 150th, no, 175th, 200th, I'm looking at Marcia, anniversary in 2017. So we have a little time to plan, but also something to mark. So, but anyway, Saturday at Southside for the Juneteenth celebration here in Ithaca.
Carol Chalk.
Yeah, I just really wanted to also congratulate the Broadband Committee and then just to ask, if there's an appropriate time later in the meeting for a report, that would be okay too. But I noticed that your last meeting that you had, which I was unfortunately unable to attend, was about a very interesting topic about net neutrality. And I was just curious if you could tell us a bit about that and if there's any action they're recommending that we take.
Currently, there's no action. Everybody came to the meeting with very fixed opinions on what it was and how it should be dealt with, and everybody left scratching their head saying, maybe that's not the right way, and let's think about it. So we're going to have another meeting. The date escapes me. I think it's the 5th of next month. Same time, same place as the last one. I think it's the 5th. And hopefully we'll come to some kind of a decision on where we stand on that and what we'd like to say about it and get that to the legislature.
Great. Thank you.
Anyone else? Kathy Luz Herrera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Leslin, I'll go back to you again.
I want to take this opportunity to shamelessly promote one of our city art venues that in the summertime often just blows us away with some of the high-quality events and actors they bring in. That's the Kitchen Theater. Were you going to say this?
No.
Because I got the card about it. Does anybody know about the Slashes of Light, the play that's going on right now? Peter knows. Well, of course, you're a theater aficionado and somebody else. And Jim, this is awesome. It's showing right now until June 29th, and it's a play by Judy Tate, and it's a joint project of the Kitchen Theater and the Civic Ensemble. I just suggest that you look it up. Where do you find the summary? A summary, a teaser. It says 1966 Chicago, sex, secrets, civil rights, surviving the Holocaust. How does a black girl make it through junior high? I think it would pique anybody's interest. Let me know if you go see it, because I'm going to try and see it before it closes on June 29th. Heard great things about it. Somebody else that has seen it could probably rave about it a little more, with a little more informed opinion, but go see it. Thank you.
Leslin?
Thank you for letting me have another bite at the apple. Brian. And thank you, Martha, for mentioning Juneteenth, because it was on my list. At 11, I think it starts at noon, 2-7 at the Southside Community Center this Saturday, and they are looking for volunteers. So I wanted to make that announcement. So if you have some time, you're willing to volunteer, set up starts at like 8 o'clock in the morning, please, an hour, half an hour, any amount will help. for volunteering. And the other thing I wanted to mention, we still have another bite, is the City of Ithaca, our 3rd of July fireworks. You know, many people enjoy the fireworks in the city. It's Thursday the 3rd. You know, so after our next legislature meeting, we'll have that. But I'm mentioning it because I know that they are, you know, seeking donations. There is a bang for your buck campaign that Vicki Taylor of the Downtown Ithaca Alliance has started, inviting people to donate towards that. You can get donation information at IthacaFireworks.com. That's IthacaFireworks, all one word, .com, if you would like to donate a buck for your bang. So please, especially for people who enjoy the fireworks in Ithaca, I just wanted to share that. And that's my bite.
All right. I've got Peter Stein, and I have Carol wants another chance, and Dave wants another chance.
I'm just responding to what Kathy was brought up. I was at that performance last weekend, and I frequently go to the kitchen, and it's quite a remarkable performance. It's not much like the kitchen, which generally has two or three casts of two or three, where at least where most of them are Actors Equity members, really professional actors. But this one had, I don't know, seven, eight, possibly characters, all of whom were amateurs. And in particular, the high school girl that had the leading role was remarkable. It was really very, very well done, very tense. You don't drop interest at all. It goes on for 3 hours. And I found it, and you have to pay attention to understand exactly what they're talking about and what the issues are. But I found it a very rewarding time in the theater. So I would recommend it to everybody.
Carol?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. This is just going to come out of my committee report time, and I realize that it's actually last. Ed Marks wanted me to make sure that, you know, high up in the meeting, that I pointed out that it is this week we are starting the public meetings on the Tompkins County Comprehensive Plan. We really, truly are looking for input from all our residents and legislators. And this is a plan that shapes and informs all walks of life here as we move through the next 5-year or 10-year period. You know, everything from housing to transportation and health and economic prosperity and water and the built environment and how we think about growth. So, I mean, you name it, it's in here, and we want input. Ed's made it easy for us because he has an op-ed in the guest viewpoint in today's Ithaca Journal. Your input wanted on Tompkins' plan. I guess comprehensive didn't fit in the title. And the meetings will be held in Groton, Jacksonville, Newfield, Caroline, at GIAC, and at the library. And the first one is this Thursday, from 11 to 1 in the afternoon. The others are in the evening at various times. So there's no excuse for anybody who wants to give us input. If you can't make it to any of those, though, you can write by email to compplan@tompkins-co.org or in writing to the County Planning Department or, I assume, to any legislators or chair. Maybe we could have a place on the website for people to put in, to give input. So read the editorial and follow the meetings or come. Thank you very much.
Dave?
Yeah, just a correction on the broadband meeting. It's Tuesday, July 8th, 5:30, the old jail.
Can we move on? Now we'll have the county administrator's report. Joe Mariana.
Thank you, Mike. Short report tonight. First of all, you may notice a new face at the conference table behind me. Jillian Harmon is here to see how we do, so let's all be on our best behavior tonight. Jillian is a Cornell intern who's working with Paula over the course of this summer, so we wanted to welcome her here tonight. My report is really one issue. I just wanted to update you on the TCOG Shared Services Committee that's gotten together to see how we can comply with what the state wants us to do as a part of the property tax freeze, which is to talk about and prepare a plan for shared services and consolidations that we might implement in the future. And I know I've given you some background on this before, so I don't need to go long on this. The committee has broken the task into two parts. The first is to compile a list of shared services, consolidations, and efficiencies that we have done in this community over time that are continuing to generate savings for taxpayers, and to get a good list together, beginning with a list and then putting some numbers next to it to be able to show the state we've already done a great deal here to save the taxpayers a great deal of money. I think all of you got the email asking if you had any thoughts on those kinds of things, shared services that we've done over time. Get them to us. We've gotten the first rush of those over to Kevin Sutherland over at the city, who's compiling all these for us. I'll send you what we sent over to Kevin. We're up to 25, and I think still counting. And these are the major things that this county has done over the course of time, beginning with the very large ones like TCAT and TC3, including the consortium, and then down to some of the things that that have really become a part of our routine. So that part of the task is well underway. The second part of the task is to start considering what else might be done in the future to look at shared services and consolidations. The committee has recommended that we focus on four areas to begin with and really try to zero in on those and see where those may go. The four areas are highways, public safety, really with a focus at this point at least on fire services, call it back office or administrative operations, things like IT that might lend themselves to sharing or centralization. And the last one is the courts system, the municipal court system, which everybody refers to as the third rail. I'm learning there are many more than three rails as we talk about consolidations and shared services. But those are the initial four areas that the group wants to take a look at. The way the task will be approached, I think, is to organize relatively small groups of some elected officials and also staff folks who are specialists in these functional areas. So if it's highways, bring in some electeds, but also bring in some highway people who can really speak to it and use that as a vehicle to explore whether there's any possibilities of shared services, and then go deep if we find that there are some prospects in those areas. Personally, I think everybody else took one step back, leaving me to agree to at least help get organized two of the four. Those two are the administrative services, again, IT, payroll, those kinds of things, records management, to try to organize the group to look at that. And the second one is that third rail issue, which is the court system, to have a group come together to take a look and see if there are any possibilities of sharing, combining, consolidating, streamlining that system of municipal courts as a part of the task that we've been given by the state, which is to look really without boundary at what we might be able to do to create some efficiencies and savings for the taxpayers. So that group is going to continue to meet. I will be reaching out to some of you for your participation in this, hopefully within the next couple of weeks, and we'll get going with the forward-looking efforts, again, in very short order. And that's my report.
Questions? Martha?
Joe, I'm sitting in Frank's seat, so I should say deja vu all over again. The year or two before TCOG got started, we had an informal, relatively informal, quite a long series of meetings with municipalities. And there were three areas of, among what you mentioned, we worked specifically on the court system, on law enforcement, and on highways. So not to say, well, we've been there, done that, anything might have changed in 10 years, but I hope you can find in your files some of the information, the records. In particular for the courts, we really worked, their numbers crunched about what it would cost to consolidate, because it's not just, you know, you're talking about a more professional operation. It's not just squishing together what we have. So it was a pretty complicated conversation. And so I hope you can, hope you can find that stuff.
And if I can't, if anybody has copies of those old reports, that would be helpful. I've heard about that study and that it was serious and well done. So if there is that kind of a document available, if you have copies of it, forward it to me. I think the only thing that may be different today is maybe the environment may be different because you have the governor saying from Albany, you must take a serious look at things that perhaps in the past weren't possible. So I think that's what we're responding to. And again, the first phase here will be exploratory. Is there any hope that anything can happen here? If the answer is no, I think we have to be honest and say that it would just be a waste of time to go farther. So we're into the early exploratory phase right now.
Well, I know with the courts, because I worked specifically in that group, you know, everybody thought it was a great idea. There were some losses in the localization of kind of treatment of offenders, but a lot of people thought it was a great idea, and then we looked at what it would cost, and it would have cost far more. So, I don't know if the governor could stand that kind of information, but it might actually be the truth. So,
interesting. If I may,
absolutely.
This is, we've talked a lot about Mildred Warner in the context of these discussions about consolidation, and you know, she's the Cornell, she's become kind of an expert in these consolidations, and her research shows that when consolidations happen, often they don't save money. Sometimes, though, they result in an improvement of the quality of service.
But not necessarily.
But not necessarily. So I think in our case, we can look at something like assessment, which did save money, but also I think there's a great example of how the quality of the service provided the taxpayers improved as a result of that consolidation. But it's interesting you say that, because she also says often there won't be money savings, but maybe you get something in terms of improved quality.
Peter Stein.
I don't know. I sent this around to all of you, and you've probably forgotten about it. I wrote an op-ed piece for the publication in the Ithaca Journal about this, which they haven't published, but they said they will. When Marcia called them up, they said they'll publish it this week. But I took the position in that is that there's nothing to be done, with one exception. And I, by the way, participated for a long time in a joint study between the city and the town, maybe, I don't know, half a dozen years ago, about can we possibly combine those and save a lot of money? And the answer, it's always the same answer, namely that it's a great idea. It makes sense for these two groups to consider planning and problems and what has to be done as one municipality rather than two, because they're so closely tied to each other by the geography. But that being said, we all thought it was a great idea, but we could not find any significant savings in salary, savings in money. And the argument was simple, that there aren't anybody sitting around that we have that doesn't do anything. And that means that if you combine two planning departments, okay, then you've got one planning department, but one planning department with twice as much to do, and so you need twice as many people. I mean, it's a simple argument. It did seem to me that the thing to search for, I can give you two things to search for that will save a lot of money. But I don't know that they could be done. I think when you look at the examples that are quoted and where people have saved money, the kind of thing that does that is something like TC3, when all of a sudden you've got two organizations that want to do the same thing and they decide to do it together. And we've got several examples of that in the local thing, the wastewater treatment plant. I'm sure you've written them all down. But in order to do that, you have to have the opportunity. You have to decide, hey, there are two big groups that want to build a university together. And if that's not the case, then you're not going to save money. And so I think if you can think about you know, two highway departments which are situated so that they could work together, and their capital, their facilities are old and need replacing, and it would be better to start from new, then there's a real opportunity that you can do something. But the other one is easy. I know a way you can save $1 million like that in Tompkins County, is you simply dissolve Cayuga Heights, the village of Dryden, village of Groton, and the other three villages that we have in Tompkins County. You'll save all the village taxes without really increasing the town taxes by very much. The problem I see is that people don't want to do it. But that certainly is something I think that will guarantee to save money, because it essentially eliminates the whole village tax rate, because those jobs aren't being done anymore. So
I guess I call on myself here as a former mayor of a village in Tompkins County. Say, Peter, I don't think you're correct. There's a lot of things that would just have to be taken over by the town and or the county if there were no villages. And the people in those dense areas of the villages would then not have self-government over themselves. I think they're just as important as the towns or the county or the city. That's my opinion.
I might want to repeat that.
Yeah, by the way, I wasn't saying that ought to be done. I was saying that that's the opportunity that I see.
I disagree that would save all that money. It would just wouldn't wouldn't go away. It would just be shifted onto the town tax, for example. That's my opinion. But thanks. Anything else for Joe? All right, can we go to our county attorney, Jonathan Wood?
Yeah, I have several issues for executive session, but nothing else. Thanks.
All right. Let's go to our director of finance, Rick Snyder, fresh back from the great state of Florida.
Nice to be back. I'd like to report tonight on the auction properties. There were approximately 20 people present last night for our auction preview meeting who expressed interest in the 15 properties which will be auctioned next week, June 23rd, at 7 o'clock p.m. at the Human Services Building, 320 West State Street in Ithaca. We worked hard to contact the property owners of these auction properties to make arrangements with them whenever possible so that their properties could be redeemed. Some have entered into installment agreements with us. Some were not eligible for installment agreements due to their defaulting on previous installment agreements. The auction list has been narrowed from 26 properties on April 30th to 20 properties back on May 19th, down to just 15 properties today. The three latest properties which have been pulled from the list consist of these: one for vacant land on Level Green Road in Caroline, which was redeemed today; one vacant land parcel in Freeville, which was pulled by the PEAK and GO committees for future development based on the Planning Department's recommendation; and one vacant land parcel in Dryden, which we removed yesterday due to the owner's bankruptcy. We removed it based on the advice of our bankruptcy lawyer. I was asked to provide information on the residential properties to the legislature to clarify which properties are owner-occupied and which properties are tenant-occupied. We do not have any formal record of this, but we sometimes have an idea of which properties are owner-occupied or tenant-occupied, and this is just based on phone calls and correspondence that we receive from these individuals, and it's placed in their file. And we also know when we go out and visit the property, such as the visit I made on April 30th, when I delivered the final and last notices to the property owners, we kind of get a whereabouts of who, if anybody, is living in the property based on conversations held with these property owners at that time. So the final work for the auction, the final paperwork, goes to the judge for his signature tomorrow. After that date, And when the judge signs it, there can be no more redemptions. And so I thought I'd bring this to you tonight, so for two reasons, so that you would receive the latest and greatest information on this auction property list, and also to encourage you to come out next Monday night at 7 o'clock to attend the auction. Thank you.
Questions for Rick? Rick, thank you for that report. Here in Tompkins County, we stand on our heads to not have to take people's properties for back taxes. And I know you committed this for the first time this year and seen our process and worked through it, and we appreciate your efforts. Resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? Dan Klein.
Yes, I'd like to add resolution to support rural public transport through reform of non-emergency Medicaid transportation. It's in your packets.
Is there a second? Seconded by Martha Robertson. All those in favor of adding it takes 10.
Could we speak?
Do we debate that? I guess we can. Go ahead, Peter.
Well, I just wanted to say that I believe that all resolutions ought to go through a committee, and there was a plan to have HSS hear this particular resolution at its next committee meeting, and so for that reason, I'll vote against this.
Someone else have a hand? All we're doing at this point is adding this to the agenda, and then it can be discussed and voted up or down, or tabled or postponed. Carol Chalk?
Would it be timely still to wait and add it to HSS?
Dan?
I'm asking Dan, yeah.
It would be beyond when the state legislature is done for the season.
All those in favor of adding it to the agenda, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? We have one opposed. Consent agenda. I'll read them. I don't believe I have any appointments, do I?
No,
no appointments tonight. So just the resolutions. Resolution A, ID 4899, grant acceptance, Town of Caroline, flood mitigation. That's ID 4899. Out of Health and Human Services, Resolution B, ID 4871, budget adjustment for revenue increase and payroll adjustments for the systems integration grant. And we've already dealt with Resolution C, so just the two resolutions. Can I have a motion on the consent agenda, please? Leslie McBean Claiborne, seconded by Martha Robertson. All in favor of the consent agenda?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Can we, Frank, are you waiting for something besides what was on the consent agenda?
Yes.
Okay, let's go to HHS committee then next. Peter?
You want my full report or just to do this?
Let's do the full report.
Huh?
Let's do the report.
Oh, I wasn't ready that effort. Okay, so what we've done on the HHS committee since the last time I reported, I wanted to report about an interesting meeting I went to at the Health Planning Council that I didn't know about, which was the use of Medicaid redesign funds that were saved. And we have a countywide attempt. The Medicaid redesign team ended up with some savings, and they gave those savings to various counties who applied for them for matters that had to do with the health of the communities. And we applied for money and got a considerable amount of money, and I wanted to just say what it is that we're doing with that. There's a program called Creating Healthy Spaces. The focus of all of this is to reduce obesity and the onset of adult diabetes. And this all has to do with exercise and proper diet. So what's being done is it was a extensive look at the county and to try to make more trails and bicycle lanes, more playgrounds and parks, and safe routes to school. One example of something that they supported was the Streets Alive celebration that happened in the city of Ithaca. Another, which I thought was interesting, was one to make sure that throughout the county, fresh fruits and vegetables were available for people to buy. It turns out convenience stores tend not to stock those items. And there are and as we know, grocery stores at villages have disappeared to some degree. And it was their attempt to try to fill, there's the attempt there to try to fill some of that lack. And the last thing is that there is our workforce wellness efforts that are going on at 12 companies, which together have about 1,200 employees, where they try to do exercise things. I don't know, I imagine the kind of things they do at Cornell. One thing, there's a program to build healthy snacks. And another thing they reported is that the county prescription card saves residents of the county more than $500,000 a year in money. So that's a pretty good thing. Another thing I wanted to report on, the Magnolia House, which there was an opening for that. It's on Meadow Street adjacent to Joe's. And three of us came, a quorum of the HHS. Dan came, Will came, and I went there. It was quite interesting. Everybody knows that building as the ugly green building there. And it is indeed not, I think, an attractive building. But inside, it's an extremely attractive building. They have something like a dozen apartments in there for women who are recovering addicts, a place where they can live with their children. And there are about a dozen of those apartments. They're pleasant rooms, very pleasant rooms. There are very nice common areas and well-equipped community kitchens there. I want to talk about a report we had from Angela Sullivan, who's head of the Alcohol and Drug Council. And this is a little bit controversial. But she talked about the medical marijuana that's now being addressed at the by the legislature.
That's the state legislature.
State legislature, right. And she has severe concerns about that program. And the things that she quoted were that there are studies that show that marijuana and alcohol are the most common entryways to problematical drug addiction. Generally, another concern was that generally all drugs on the marketplace for medical use, for all of those drugs on the marketplace for medical use, there are lengthy studies of the safety, effectiveness, dosage, and side effects before it is distributed to the public. That's what the FDA does. They do not do this for medical marijuana. The concentration of THC, the active ingredient in marijuana, has been radically increased since the previous century. So smoking a marijuana joint gives you a whole lot more effect today than it did 20 or 30 years ago. The decrease in health the Department of Health will be responsible. Our Department of Health will be responsible for regulating medical marijuana in this county, and which will require, she believes, a considerable increase in resources to manage that program. And one that she said, and I feel very strongly, is that alcohol and drugs, whether directly or indirectly, are currently the main sources of the main routes to jail. If you go in the jail and you ask why are people in these jail, it's because they've done something either with alcohol or with drugs. And I think there is a reason. One can imagine that having more marijuana used in the community will increase the cost of the jails. So those were the concerns that she gave at the meeting. And she concluded by saying that there's going to be a big experiment done in the state of Colorado, and we ought to wait and see what happens as a result of that. There was an update on the New York State Marketplace and ACA enrollments, namely the program called, what is it called? Guides, no, what is it called?
Navigators.
Navigators, yes, the Navigator program, given by Cassandra Aikman. The prediction was originally that there would be a million enrollments in New York State in 3 years. As of the moment, in 1 year, there were 700,000. So that's very favorable expectation. I kind of wondered why we have navigators. The whole thing confused me. Why do we need those things? And she mentioned that it occurred to me that buying health care, buying health insurance, is not something that most of us do. I have never shopped for health insurance in my whole life. And I think in our country, the normal thing is that when I was very young, you didn't need health insurance because health costs weren't all that expensive. When I grew older, what happened was that employers gave health insurance. And so the only shopping I ever did was say, did I want the 80-20 plan or did I want the managed care plan? But there was no looking at things and trying to understand it. And the people who are probably buying health insurance now are people that have not had it before, and they tend to be confused, but they don't understand the language. And it's like buying a car when you've never been in it before and never done that before. So that's the reason we really need navigators. I wanted to announce that on June 23rd at the Tompkins County Public Library, there'll be a workshop for anybody that needs to counsel people who are seeking health insurance. COFA, we had a report from Lisa Holmes. COFA has been awarded $270,000 of Medicaid redesign funds. There must have been a lot of money saved by the Medicaid redesign company effort. To understand where am I? Oh yeah. To be used prior to September 2015, COFA will use it primarily for helping residents understand and take advantage of long-term care insurance opportunities. And that's all I have to say. Our next HHS meeting is on July 8th at 3:30 at the usual time.
And you have a resolution.
Yeah, why don't you move your resolution, then we'll come back for questions.
Okay. That's the alcohol resolution. I mean, excuse me, the tobacco resolution.
Resolution D.
Resolution D. I'm sorry. Let me get it up here. Resolution D, which is Resolution 488. For a resolution in support of ending tobacco sales at pharmacies.
Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Discussion. Julie Kiefer.
I was wondering, on line 20, what survey or source is there for that information, and shouldn't it be in that whereas? Is it according to some year's survey by some local group?
There's a notation that tells you at the bottom of the resolution. I'm sorry, mine is fuzzy. It's 6 is the notation. So if you go down to the bottom to 6, it was a community tobacco survey of adult residents of Tompkins County done by Joel Lalone Consulting out of Watertown, New York, in June 2013.
So would it be acceptable to say, whereas according to a 2013 consultant survey, a majority, would that be accurate?
Yes.
So I would like to move that amendment.
All right, we have an amendment that's been moved. Can you restate it, please, Dooley?
It's ephemeral. I mean, whereas according to a 2013 consultants survey, a majority, then the rest is as written.
Is there a second for that amendment?
Friendly?
Jim Dennis. Is it friendly?
Friendly. Yeah.
Friendly.
Okay, then it's friendly. It'll be part of it. Are you done, Dooley?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to mention that Frank Krupa, the director of health department, has joined us here and speaking. Mike Sigler.
My question is, the way I read this is, so Wegmans is out, Tops is out, PNC, basically every place that's pharmacy.
You'll still be able to buy a pack of cigarettes.
Is there?
Well, I mean, I don't smoke, but
other questions?
You can't Wegmans, right?
Other questions?
Brian, just clarify that the resolution in front of you does not have any statutory or legal authority behind it. It is you supporting a message. Our goal has been over the last 5 years to educate the community and decision makers about the challenges of selling tobacco next to pharmacies that market themselves as a healthcare facility. And the Board of Health passed this very similar resolution, again encouraging those in our community that do sell tobacco in their pharmacies to consider following both CVS's example as well as our local Green Street Pharmacy's example of not selling tobacco right next to drugs that are billed to help you be healthy.
Thank you. Peter?
I think that things like this don't make any difference because it's really easy to buy a pack of cigarettes anywhere. And 20 years ago, I would have said there's no point in doing that. But it's become clear to me that that's not true. I mean, it makes sense what I just said, but I think it's not true because there's been a dramatic decrease in tobacco without it being outlawed. And I think it must be the result of all of these small steps that were taken to change advertising, to make it harder to get it, a little bit harder to get it. And that's and tobacco still remains a major health problem in our country. And so I think this is a good thing to do.
Dooley Kiefer.
Frank, your comments makes me wonder, do we as a county have the ability or the authority to say within Tompkins County this can't happen?
I would probably have to consult the county attorney to know that for certain, but that was not the direction we as public health educators were really wanting to go. We were more interested in educating folks and hoping that through that education they would make good, strong decisions to help us have a healthier community.
Kathy Luz Herrera.
Jonathan, do you have
an
answer?
I can't say that for sure, but I think there's a safe bet you would have a legal challenge, and certainly you would have a legal challenge with, I wouldn't say some merit, but it certainly wouldn't be frivolous. So, I don't know that any municipality has tried to do that in New York State. I think very likely one would be challenged if one tried to do that. And certainly there's a question, but not a certainty, that you couldn't do that.
Kathy.
Thank you. I seconded this because in my life I've seen the real effects of societal and peer group pressure on ending unhealthy behaviors. A recent example for us, maybe it hasn't ended it, but think about grassroots. And a concerted effort on the part of the health department, I believe, and other community groups to put, what was it? They put those stickers on the six-packs to just remind people not to overindulge and to particularly put in the mind of folks that selling to underage was not only illegal but a problem. I think it cut down a lot of the in the past, underage drinking that occurred at that particular event and some of the public intoxication after and outside the event. I'm extrapolating here, but I seem to remember some of this from our Health and Human Services reports. In my lifetime, and here in Tompkins County, I've seen whole campuses of healthcare facilities like Cougar Medical Center and others become tobacco-free. There's no law that says they can't or enabling them to do so, but in fact, they withstood whatever kind of legal pressure may have been put up against them to do it simply because the belief is there and is put forward through education from our health department that contributing to the use of tobacco is against the primary interests of the folks that are taking part in improving their health care. But it's got to be education. So I think that doing this is both educational for our communities and letting people know that these two things, if not diametrically opposed, are at least inconsistent in policy, selling tobacco, which has been known to cause cancer, and having health care goods for sale there. And I think this is a good resolution. I understand there might be some questions raised as to whether we could pass a law, but that doesn't stop us from educating the public and from trying to assert some societal and organizational pressure on pharmacies in our area. So I support this wholeheartedly, and I hope that everyone else joins me.
Nathan, did you have your hand up?
No,
I didn't. Okay. Brian, then.
I guess normally we'd, if there's an amendment, we speak to the amendment, and that's actually what I would like to do. I'll vote against the amendment only because I think...
I think the amendment was friendly.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
Both us to the...
Next question, then.
And the seconder.
Okay. Next question, then. I see in committee that there was one dissenting vote, and I'd be curious to know why.
Who was the dissenter? Dan?
Well, a couple of things. I think that pharmacies sell lots of things that I would consider unhealthy, like diet soda and candy bars. And I've just been thinking a lot about this. I don't really see the connection between a place that sells medicine selling things beyond medicine, things other than medicine. Clearly they do. I don't see anyone sort of getting confused that, oh, here's things good for your health and here's something bad for your health and confusing the two. So I just don't, it's not going to change the amount of people that smoke or the amount of cigarettes that get smoked. It's just going to change where they buy them.
Okay, we're ready to vote. All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? Two opposed. Excuse me, two opposed.
Thank you.
Anything else, Peter?
No.
Questions for Peter.
Peter, did you say that the Tompkins RX prescription drug card is saving our residents $500,000 a year?
That's what I was told. I said that number surprised me. Was that really true? And they said yes. So I didn't look any further into it.
Wow, that's great. And do you know, it used to be about 24% off of most, on average, off of most prescriptions. Do you know?
I don't know any more than I said. Thank you.
Thanks
sorry.
Very much. Okay.
Frank, did you want to comment?
Yeah, sorry, Peter, but I believe the number was 171,000 was the savings, and the percentage is between 25 and 35% on the average drugs that are saved. But the cards are everywhere now, and people are taking advantage of them.
171,000?
Yes, I believe that's the number, but I can confirm that for Peter.
I mean, that's great. Didn't have to be.
What's 300,000 a month, Frank?
Thank you very much, yes. Frank. Okay.
Jim Dennis?
71,000 per year. So if we were in Congress right now, we would actually say it's over $1 million.
Jim Dennis.
That's how you calculate.
Jim?
Nothing, Michael. I'll add it on what, under the budget committee.
You're up. Did you not? You had your hand up.
I said no. I will add it on under the budget.
Sorry. Okay. Anyone else? Any other questions for Peter? Okay. Then let's go back to the top of the agenda. For committees, and it's Charter Review Committee. I can report that we did meet, and that was on the June 4th. We heard from the county administrator and the division heads in Public Works about the Public Works sections in the Charter, particularly with respect to whether or not we should consider eliminating the language in the Charter having to do with a Public Works Commissioner and reorganizing so that the divisions would actually, the division heads would become department heads reporting directly to the county administrator. That discussion is continuing, and we'll probably be talking more about it at our next meeting. Any questions? Carol?
Yeah. How many people would that make reporting to the county administrator?
Joe?
It's in the mid-20s.
Although,
keep in mind, my office also has a deputy county administrator. So in terms of the burden that I've assumed, there are really two of us that have that oversight responsibility.
So I wondered if the committee was planning to hear any input from human resources consultants or professionals or whatever about, you know, what's a desirable number of direct reports to not overwhelm
we haven't talked.
Whoever it is, even if they're not a superhuman being.
I would point out that they presently report to the county administrator, those four divisions.
No, I know.
Jim Dennis?
You said what I was going to say.
Any other questions I can answer? Thank you. Let's go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you, Michael. June 23rd, 4 p.m., is our next meeting, and we will be discussing about 12 or 14 applications for the vacant seat on the TC3 board that will come vacant July 1st. And I would hope that everyone has an opportunity to look at those prior to the meeting. It's a very extensive list of people who have applied for that position. I want to make one comment about what Peter said in terms of grocery stores in villages that are disappearing. As a matter of fact, the town of Dryden, or village of Dryden, I believe, has a prosperous grocery store that operates on off Route 13. And the SureSave in the town of Ulysses just doubled its size. It is the second biggest sales taxpayer after McGuire, Ford, Chevy, Nissan. It is the second largest employer in the town of Ulysses after the Trumansburg Central School District. So at least one place there's a grocery store that is thriving, and they have found a way to double the size of that grocery store. And sushi has landed in the town of Ulysses, in case anyone wants to be there. Yeah. So that would be my report. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Any questions for Jim? Public Safety Committee, Brian Robinson, Chair.
Thanks, Mike. Public Safety Committee has not met since our last meeting. I think there's a... We've all heard of jet lag. Maybe there's a little bit of jail lag in there somewhere. We are not scheduled to meet until July 8th. However, I'm told by staff that we will probably need a meeting prior to the July 1st meeting. That has not been set, but I think tentatively it's like 5 o'clock. We have two grants that need to be received for the sheriff's office, and one grant, if you recall, OAR has a position through a grant that they need to start trying to hire someone into that position. So that will be one of them. And we will probably know at that point, and maybe I'm talking out of school, but we may not. Based on that meeting, we may not even need the July 8th meeting. And if we do, I will not be present. I will be away with my wife and 30 of my closest relatives. So whoever, I don't recall who the vice chair is, but if that were to be the case, I will not be here. And I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Martha Robertson.
Did you say you want to do 5 o'clock on July 1st?
I'm going to defer to Kathy.
I think right now 5 o'clock would work.
Yeah. Okay, shall we move on? Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslyn McBean-Claiborne is our chair.
Thank you. WDIC has not met since our last meeting. We will be meeting next Wednesday at 3:30 in the old jail conference room. However, we have 2 small subcommittees that are meeting. There's a group that's continuing its review process of the RFPs for the county's climate survey. So that process is moving along. And there's also a small group that is working on updating our recruitment resource guide. And that's my report.
Questions? Thank you, Leslie. We go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Kathy Luz Herrera is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We met June 16th. Seems like so long ago, but it was only yesterday. And I've got an agenda here, but I just want to summarize it. You're going to be seeing some solid waste-related resolutions. They've been investing in one case, buying some used equipment for dealing with the composting of, I don't want to say solid waste. You know how people, they were bragging about it. They can bring their food scraps to solid waste, and they'll be turning them to turn them into compost. And a couple of others, including a hydraulic truck scale that will be used to weigh said compost to be. So we talked about that, and the big thing of the meeting was Joe reviewed for us at our request the capital plan for 2015, well, actually the 5-year plan. And it was very interesting because in the past when we've looked at this, we've thought about how it would be great to have a chance to talk about it before the budget season. You all know when we get in the budget season, you're kind of focusing on that. And if the 5-year capital program is something that hasn't been considered before, it becomes more of a constraint than a possible tool. So we spent quite a while discussing it. And among those things, we got a chance to talk about things that aren't directly paid for by the taxpayer, such as the enterprises like the airport and solid waste. They are doing things like at the airport. They have to do a run overlay design and construction. Apparently there's some cracks that have to be dealt with. And a bunch of this is underwritten through federal and state revenue and some money in airport funds, which comes from, I guess, passenger revenues and other related but not direct property tax-related funds. We've got to do some replacement to the 911 telephone system to make it integrate better with our software and other systems. And that will be mostly grant-funded. More good news. Hey, and the big thing is we've got to do capital maintenance of county buildings. Y'all know that at the depth of the recession, we deferred a lot of capital maintenance, and that is our prerogative and one that we use to help us meet some of our needs at that time. We also planned, and I think it's a good plan, to, in less lean years, figure out a way to set goals so that we can have a way to pay for these improvements, such as the first floor renovations to the mental health building lobby, storm sewers beneath the public works facility, Ellis Hollow Road reconstruction, and many others, to be able to pay for them without having to borrow so much money at the time. The way that you do that is put aside a set amount, if possible, every year. So our 5-year capital plan involves 50 some odd million dollars, $50.2 million, and of that, we're going to get like $20.8 million in 20.8 million is our local share, so we got to support that through the property tax. And the idea is, yeah, that made my head whip around too. But the idea is, if we wait and do it every time with every instance, we end up paying more for it. So if we do it this way, it's kind of a, you know, you've heard about when we talk about contracts, front-loading a contract. Well, we're kind of front-loading it where we can, understanding that by looking at it early, we'll be able to adjust should we need to during the budget process. And I think it's a really smart way to do it. We paid a particular attention to some of the road programs and the capital maintenance program for recycling and solid waste, although it's 50% paid through by a NYSDAC capital grant and the rest through solid waste revenues. It's the kind of maintenance program that is planned long ahead of time because some of the machinery is wearing out. And if we don't think about it ahead of time, it's going to grab us. So these are some of the things we discussed, and you're going to be hearing about those three resolutions, I guess, at the next legislature meeting. Our next meeting is on July 21st at 10:30, but I would like to ask members of the committee to chime in and go over what I missed or anything they want to talk about, if that's all right.
Sure. Any other comments? How about Peter?
I have a question for Rick Snyder. Does it actually, I mean, it sounds good to do that, to put aside money so that you don't have to pay interest on the loan. Does that actually save money? And if so, why doesn't everybody do it?
Well, it's the same reason why when we buy our home, we finance it, or when we buy a car, we typically finance it. Years ago, my parents bought a home, and they bought their cars without financing it. It seems hard to believe. If we said that to our generation or to our kids' generation, that could be done, they'd look at you like you were a little bit squirrely. But what I found in government is that old school still has a lot of places in government where they still pay as you go. And they may save up a lot of money each year, and then in the third or fourth year, they do a street improvement program and pay basically cash after saving 3 or 4 or even 8 or 10 years versus going out and bonding it or going out and borrowing it. Here's where it works for you and where the positive side is. It's just like how interest works for you compounding it in your savings account or in your retirement account. When you have money, the interest that's being earned is your interest, and you're growing money in the bank. When you're paying a loan or a debt or a mortgage, interest works against you. You're paying more for the product or more for that object over time. And so with that in mind, it works the same way in government. Would we be able to save enough dollars to be able to do a project that interest savings would definitely reduce the cost of the project? Is it hard to do? Yes, it is. And I'll just end my statement by saying I've been in a couple of places where they have what they call R&R accounts or renewal and replacement accounts. And what the department head is responsible for is attributing so much per year to the replacement of, say, some big equipment. A good example would be like in the highway department, if you have big trucks or payloaders or things like that, you might put money away for 10 years, $20,000 or $10,000 a year for 10 years until you have $100,000 in an R&R account for that one piece of equipment. And then you go out and buy it because that's when you're going to need it. And I've worked in places where they've had 30 or 40, 50 R&R accounts, sometimes a separate R&R account for each big piece of equipment or big facility or each building. And so you're putting money aside. Current tax dollars are putting money aside each year. And it's just the converse of borrowing is saving. And so it does work for you in the long run. Is there a discipline to do that? Yeah, it's very hard to turn it around and to do that. But it can work for you very positively if you do.
Okay, I understand that. But the question I was asking was, It's a good thing to do if you've got the money, and if you don't got the money, then it isn't a good thing to do. So, but if we were to do that, we would take it from taxpayers at an earlier time than we used it. And I'm just wondering if it really makes sense. Is it not in the best interest of ourselves, but is it in the best interest of our constituents to take money from them and save it up for a period of 10 years or something like that? Because a dollar changes. I don't know, but it seems to me that it's something you could think through and decide what's the answer to it. I don't have an answer, but I'm wondering if that's well understood.
Have Jim Dennis.
Thank you very much. Joe, you're going to help me with this, but there was a report that came from the governor's office, a 10-page report talking about the fiscal, the reality of every town and every village and Tompkins County. And if one would check that, every town in Tompkins County has a significant fund balance. One of the villages has a 650% fund balance of their budget. The town of Ithaca is operating with a significant fund balance. So all these towns have been taking money from taxpayers for whatever reason, saving it up to build the windmill or whatever. So there are a whole bunch of elected officials in Tompkins County have bought into that program that have saved, huge amounts of money in fund balances that go unrecognized until this report, which I thought was pretty amazing, that we all had copies of. So we operate on a 10% fund balance, 10, 11% fund balance, and we've recently moved to that. And it's rainy day money. I can't wait to meet a town board person and ask what kind of rainy day is coming in their lives that they have the kind of money salted away that some of them have. So
let's see if we can rein this into the facilities and infrastructure discussion.
Martha?
I think it's one way to look at it is who's paying for the thing. Now, if you really have a long-term discipline, then it works out that the people in 2010 are enjoying the thing that people from 2000 to 2010 saved for, but then those people are also saving for the thing that's going to be built in 2020, let's say. But that's a long-term I don't know if it really works out that way. I think the idea of borrowing and paying it off a little at a time, borrowing when you need the money and then paying it off a little at a time, means that the people who are paying for it are the ones who are using it. There's that thought. Because if you put money away like that, if you save that money prior to building or buying something, there's an opportunity cost in the money. The money is just sitting there. And frankly, unless municipal accounts are making a lot more than, my personal savings account, you're not making anything on that money. And I assume maybe you're doing better with our big accounts. But so I don't know if that's a way to look at it, who's actually doing are the people who are paying for it the people who are actually going to benefit from the project?
Ryan Robinson.
I guess maybe another way to look at it would be present day, money is fairly cheap. I mean, you can borrow it fairly cheaply, but that's may not always be the case. So now you've got a project that's scheduled for 10 years from now, and you have the cash, but if you were to bond that 10 years from now and it's a significant interest rate, that's all the more reason to do what they're suggesting. The problem I see is that, and we're all guilty of it, is that it would have to be in a, in a vault and not part of the fund balance, because we want to raid the fund balance from time to time. So that's kind of defeating the purpose there. I'm sorry, Mike, we're getting a little bit off track. But
a lot off track.
Okay.
Can we try to wind it up, Carol?
Start the discussion.
Yeah, I'm going to try to bring it back a little bit. And these are good questions that are raised, and it was really good to hear certainly the overall presentation about the capital plan. I really appreciated, Joe, your bringing it before we were in the throes of budget season. I hope that I would urge you to bring it to some other committees so that the five of us who were there at F&I aren't the only ones who get to hear the overview. On the other hand, we didn't really have time to get into the individual, the information sheets, the PAR forms for the individual projects. So I'm just curious about whether that there's going to be an opportunity at another committee to do either the overview and or the be looking at the individual sheets that we didn't get to do.
Joe?
Yeah, I think Kathy Luz at the last meeting said we're going to come back to this at the next F&I meeting to get into some of the details. Also, budget, capital, and personnel will have a briefing on this at some point over the course of the process. So there will be a second committee there. And if anybody has an interest in looking at what the projects are, we've tried to do a plain language version of all these forms that we do, and it's available on the F&I through the F&I agenda packet, so you can take a look at it there. I just want to make a quick comment, not to get into the weeds, a quick comment. So it's not that we're going to switch from a bonded strategy to a pay-as-you-go type strategy. What we're doing is, first of all, I think when you look at the debt service projections, you're going to be pleased to see that debt service is going to be relatively stable over the next 10 years. And it's largely because even though we're going to be borrowing for some projects over the next couple of years, there's some big ones coming, there's a lot of debt being paid off over that same period of time. So we're able to fill those hollows with new debt to flatten out the effect on levy. But also by policy, we're trying to build our capital capacity. So by policy, we've said we're going to raise our property tax levy by a certain percent per year or fraction of a percent per year to build up our future capacity so that you have a choice when the time comes. Are we in a situation where we can afford to keep putting money into a capital reserve or not? Do we want to pay cash or borrow? So what we've really done, I think, is to expand the options available to the legislature in future capital decision-making with the way this has been structured. That was the goal of the plan.
Okay.
And that's what I thought I said.
You did.
No, thank you very much. This is the kind of discussion we need to have. And I want to say that our next meeting is July 21st at 10:30. I'd like to ask committee members and anybody who wants to attend, go over the PAR forms. And I know for me, I had to highlight places where I have questions. And please come. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. Will Burbank chairs our Economic Development Committee. Will?
And we have not met since our last meeting, but we will be meeting on Monday, July 7th at 3:30 over at the old jail conference room. And, Mike, I want to thank you very much for making that that open house today at the night.
Nice thing. So. Questions for Will? Nathan Shinagawa chairs our Government Operations Committee.
The Government Operations Committee has not met yet for the month. We will soon, and then I'll report afterwards. Thank you.
Questions? Old Library Committee did meet. We met on June 5th, and we had invited in Mayor Myrick as well as Planning Commissioner or Planning Director Joanne Cornish. Councilman J.R. Claiborne was there, and other Nels Bone from the Urban Renewal Agency. Talk to us about the site, their vision for the site, what they'd like to see. Ask them about things like zoning, their historic district, and what developers might have to navigate in order to bring a project to fruition there. Among other things, they told us that they are anxious to see the property back on the tax rolls, and they're interested in housing over there and other mixed uses as a possibility. And they thanked us for bringing them in to ask these questions because they recognized that we weren't required to do that. But as we said to them, that we know, even though the county may not be required to ask permission from the city, the developers will have to do that because they are private entities that will be looking at that. We also had one of the neighbors come in. That was the some representatives from Lifelong to talk about the site and discussions that they have had about being the neighbor of that property and should they become involved with a future developer or developers. Questions? We'll be meeting again. We're starting to have interviews. We're scheduling 2 days. We'll have interviews with all six of the responders to the request for expressions of interest, and they will likely be closed. The first one is July 9th. Karen's reminding me the regular meeting is July 9th.
Mike?
Will?
When you say closed to the public, would that be also closed to non-committee members? Or
any time we have executive session, for example, any legislator is able to come to that.
So you will announce those?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Planning Committee, Planning Energy and Environmental Quality Committee. Carol Chalk is the chair.
Well, we like to keep people on their toes on this committee, so committee members realize that tomorrow's meeting, June 18th, will be at 12:30 p.m. At the old jail, and tonight's meeting at 5 o'clock was just a teaser. That didn't count. You still have to come tomorrow. And we will be looking at the comprehensive plan. We'll be Sharon Anderson will be visiting us about impairments to Cayuga Lake, talking more about the our own housing fund. This is the joint fund with the city and Cornell. We'll be as a resolution about the priority trails strategy and another one about farmland protection. And a third about conservation easements, and a fourth, we're going to be beginning to talk about the what we did 2 years ago, opt out of the New York State real property tax exemptions for renewable energy properties, and whether the status of what the status of that. We've invited Jonathan, Jay, Heather Filiberto, if she'd like to come. So it should be a lively meeting. Encourage you to come.
Questions? Okay. Individual member filed resolutions. Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the timeline of this, the reason that it's coming as a...
Why don't you go ahead and move the resolution, and I'd like you to talk about it.
Thank you. Yes, I'd like to move the resolution support for rural public transit through reform of non-emergency Medicaid transportation.
Is there a second? Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Go ahead.
Thank you. So last Monday, there was a meeting in Albany with Assemblywoman Lifton, Senators O'Mara, Seward, representatives of the governor's office, representative from Department of Health, and mobility managers from different counties. And that's where a lot of this information came from about what they're starting to, the ideas are starting to coalesce around. Health and Human Services Committee was the next day, which is why we didn't get it ready in time for the committee vote. And the state legislature does go in recess this week, probably for the whole year. That's why the timeline is as it is. So I'm sorry for not going through the regular channels in this. I want to thank Dwight Mengel, our mobility manager with DSS, for helping me a lot with this information because it's complicated. So you've seen some of this before. The whereases are more or less the same as you've seen before. I want to just run through each resolve really quickly so you understand what it is that we're actually asking for. If you look at the first resolve, it's just asking the state to recognize that using linking Medicaid and bus transportation is not just about getting people to their medical appointments, but that because if Medicaid is paying for their transportation to their medical appointment, they're not paying for their transportation to the pharmacy or to the supermarket or whatever it is that else they need to do. So it's just asking New York State to recognize that buses are playing a role beyond medical transportation. The second resolved is referring to $1 million that was put in the New York State budget this year but has not yet been allocated of how it's going to be used. It's meant to help rural bus systems this year, but this year is ticking by and there's no plan of how to use it. And some of these counties are in big trouble. Dwight said, I was not able to actually find anything on the internet, but Dwight Mengels told me that Chenango County's bus service is out of business. The third resolved is asking the state to develop a plan for future support, to do some good planning around this. About
I don't understand that resolved.
Which one, the third one?
The third one. Wait, I'm sorry. Nope, the fourth one.
The fourth one, okay. The fourth one has to do with rates for Medicaid patients' use of rural public transit, representing the full cost of such services. The idea here is that if the medical dispatcher that's now housed in Syracuse does end up putting someone on a bus to get to a medical appointment, that bus company should get more than a dollar or more than whatever their normal fare is. Under the old system, the buses were getting a lot of money. I don't know the exact amount, but in the tens of dollars for these rides. That system is gone, but this is asking that if somebody is put on the bus for Medicaid purposes, that it recognizes the true cost of that special routes. Again, these aren't fixed routes. These are almost operating like taxis where you can get picked up at your house and taken to an appointment outside of the normal bus route and the bus times, and that also that there's a dispatch involved in that. So that's what's talking about the real costs rather than just the bus fare. Does that help, Dooley?
Well, that was a clearer explanation than what these words say, yes. But I wondered where taxis fit into that. Is that considered public transit?
No.
If a bus company has a portion of what they support, more individualized transit, that doesn't count either. I don't understand the full cost of providing such services as it's worded here, although what you said made it clearer if they were going out of their way to take a particular Medicaid patient to a particular destination. But that's not what this says.
I want Dan to be able to get through the whole thing, if we could.
Yes,
and then
I'm
sorry. If we want to go back and look at some of the language, let's do that.
Thank you. And I guess I don't have more to say about that. So,
okay. But do you want to finish talking about the resolution, or you want to talk more?
Yes, I do have one more. So the fifth resolved also is just asking the state to do some good planning in the future. There used to be this interagency coordinating committee, and it lapsed several years ago, and this is asking for it to be reinstated so that Department of Health, Department of Labor, the governor's office, and county DSSs, everybody, all the rural bus services, everyone can be talking about this issue together, which is, I guess, part of the reason why this whole thing collapsed. They were no longer talking.
Now, Dooley, is there a particular question that you have? Or do you want to move an amendment, or what?
I don't have an amendment to be moved. I'm still trying to understand what this implies the way it's worded now. I haven't gotten there.
All right. Carol, then Peter, then Martha.
Well, first, I want to thank Dan for bringing this. I know it's your third attempt, and we've talked about it here a little bit, and you've taken it back and reworked it, so I appreciate it. I would hope that we can pass this in time to send it while they're still in session for this year, and if they don't do anything on the state level this year, that they then have a year to keep considering it. I would hope that we also here wouldn't feel the need to determine exactly how the state would handle each of these elements. I think the important thing is for them, you know, that we're weighing in that this is an issue, that public transportation costs a whole lot more than anybody pays for when they get on the bus. So, you know, and that the exact wording isn't as important as the sentiment that we'd like them to be recognizing this and not pulling the Medicaid money out of public transit. So thank you.
Peter?
At some point, I would like to move to send this back to committee, but not yet, because I don't want to stop the debate on it.
Martha?
But I want to make a comment before doing that, if that's okay. I think I feel like I'm second to none in my commitment to public transportation, which I really believe is extremely important, particularly having to do with climate change and those various issues. If I believe there were any chance to this thing being brought up at the present time in Albany, I would certainly support it because I believe in it. But I don't. It hasn't been passed by either house, and at the moment they're working on the high profile issues where they have been passed and there are disagreements between the two bodies. Like medical marijuana, for one thing. But I think we could do a better job. I think there's a serious problem in this resolution about asking them to take money from Medicaid, which is basically a health issue, and put it to the onto rural buses. That doesn't seem to me to be the right thing to do, and it isn't defensible. I think that rural buses deserve transportation, and we ought to be asking for them to do that. So it's basically that concerns me. And I agree that the fact that there are bus services that are going out of business is a terrible thing. But on the other hand, I see zero possibility that passing this resolution, that's going to be discussed at the table that's going on in Albany. So that's why I think we ought to think some more about exactly what it is we're asking them to do.
Martha Robertson.
Maybe that's true, Peter, but I think we've got to get something out the door. Who knows what happens in that last, flurry of things that they do in the last 24 hours. I wish we'd had something people could agree on earlier. But I trust that this is what we should do, and let's get it done. And I think the raising the profile of the issue is, if we can't solve it this year, maybe this issue of allocating the money that's already in the budget, maybe that will actually happen, and we'll get this to the table, at some point later in this year or at least next session. I think we've got to do it. This is a critical issue. It's appalling that we're looking at the failure of rural bus service. I guess there aren't enough votes in Chenango County, you think?
Jim Dennis and then me.
Thank you. We've wasted our time before talking about resolutions, but I believe what we have to do, we have to send this resolution now. And if they leave, they leave. Then we have to send it again. It'll get to a committee, and we have to do it over and over again. It takes a lot of effort to wake some of these people up, and I don't think anything we're doing here is wrong. And I will give you the example. The IDA a week ago had an issue with the law that IDAs were going to be affected by a law that was in a committee and all of that in Albany. We put something together quickly. We sent it off. We talked to our legislators. And now that thing has kind of gone away for this session. And that was all done within the last 10 days. So I don't think you're wrong at all to bring this. Clearly, we can't forget about it. You'll have to do it again. Health and Human Services will have to do it again. And, it gives people something to think about for the 6 months that they're off trying to get reelected. So.
I will support this motion. I think it's, even though we are not directly affected in our bus system in the same way that some of the outlying counties are. What it does is show our solidarity with them. They help provide transportation for people who live in those counties that come into Tompkins County and work here. And that takes some of the cars off of our roads and helps our infrastructure situation. So I think we should go ahead and pass this tonight. Dooley?
There are two changes I will offer to this as amendments. One is I move to strike the last whereas. I think that that is not relevant to what we're asking, and I will move to strike separately the fourth resolve. So,
want to do that?
I have to do them separately, right. Yes. I'll move to strike.
We have a motion to amend to strike the last whereas. Is there a second for that? Not seeing a second. Go ahead, Dooley.
Okay, that's too bad. I think it takes people in the wrong direction. And the fourth resolved, I would move to strike. I don't think that's necessary.
Which
to
one,
get
please?
The fourth resolved. I don't think it's necessary to get the bottom line message across either.
Dooley's moving an amendment to strike the fourth resolved. Is there a second?
What's the fourth one?
Fourth resolved. Resolved further that Tompkins County asked New York State to pay rates for Medicaid patients' use of rural public transit service that represent the full cost of providing such services.
Instead of the standard rate, whatever that is.
I'm not seeing a second. Let's move on. Peter, do you want to bring your motion? You're not going to bring your motion. Okay. Then are we ready to vote? Dan?
Just one last quick comment. I understand the idea of taking the Medicaid part out of it, and the reason it's in there is because, you know, whether it was a good idea or not, Medicaid and these rural bus service funding were linked, and some of the Medicaid savings that the state is realizing is due to cutting the subsidy of the bus services. That's why they're linked, and that's why it's in there.
All right, let's vote. All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? Dooley, did you vote?
I'll vote for it.
All right, that's unanimous then. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Minutes of the previous meeting, June 3rd. It's moved by Leslin, seconded by Brian. Discussion? Ready to vote? Those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? We have one opposed. We need to move into executive session to discuss collective bargaining and also contract negotiations with respect to real property. Do I have a motion to go into executive session? Mike Sigler. Do I have a second? Seconded by Carol Chalk. All those in favor? Those opposed? That's unanimous. We don't expect to take action when we come out.